Welcome to the Future of Teamwork podcast, where we explore cutting-edge strategies to keep teams human-centered, drive innovation, and empower you with the tools and insights needed to help your teams excel and thrive in today's rapidly changing world. Your host is Dane Gruneveld, a seasoned expert with over 20 years of experience enhancing team dynamics and innovation. In this episode of The Future of Teamwork, Dane sits down with Jenna Cohen, SVP of Team Effectiveness at Leader, to explore the power of rhythm, reflection, and relationship building in today's workplaces. Jenna shares why team dynamics don't start and stop with the leader, and how intentional team building practices like new leader assimilations and lifeline storytelling exercises help surface and celebrate individual strengths and experiences. She also explores why community building at work and beyond requires intentionality, not perfection. Whether you're onboarding a new teammate or navigating a strategic pivot, this conversation is full of grounded wisdom for anyone focused on the human side of organizational performance. So, teamwork makes the dream work, and we're here to inspire your next collaborative breakthrough. Gather your team or put on your headphones, and let's dive in together.
Welcome to the Future of Teamwork podcast. My name is Dane Gruneveld, CEO of the Huddle 3 Group. And today I'm joined by a friend and colleague, Jenna Cohen. So Jenna is the Senior Vice President of Team Effectiveness on our team at Leader. And it's going to be fun just having a conversation outside of our day-to-day jobs here. So welcome, Jenna.
Thanks, Dane. I'm excited to be here.
It's always good to kind of connect with people, new friends and, existing friends in this format. I just find the curiosity and conversation super cool. So let's just start with like wind the clock all the way back to, you know, how did you come to be doing all this cool work in this field? Tell us more about you.
Yeah, thank you. So I would say if I go back to, it's my second job out of undergrad, I was working in a nonprofit doing work with international partnerships between communities here in the Boston area and in Israel and Ukraine, actually. And there are sister city relationships. And I found myself as a program coordinator for some of the efforts that were underway between those communities, one of which was a learning exchange between NGO leaders in Haifa, Israel, and Boston. And through that work, I got the opportunity to learn from and meet many different nonprofit leaders in both cities, as well as to design and facilitate and create space for learning and conversation between those leaders, sharing best practice, sharing experience, commiserating on common problems that they were aiming to solve for and learning from different approaches to that cross-culturally, cross-geographically, and also things that were quite similar as ways to address those challenges. That after that experience for about 5 years, I went to business school where I learned that there was a field around organization effectiveness and development, which often showed up in the HR space within organizations. And I hadn't had that lens during my time at JCRC. It was just kind of the work that I was doing. And it was a ton of fun working cross-generationally with that work. Some of my dearest friends were my parents' age or older in that work. And then I found out that there was a career path that could allow me to do similar work in an ongoing way. So I doubled down on that area of focus in my MBA program, pivoted to doing organization development work in healthcare and biotech following that, and then had the opportunity to shift into the consulting realm earlier in my career than I expected, but nonetheless has created a great opportunity to be part of work that's happening to enhance working within organizations and across teams to often in service of a mission. So I found myself in biotech, as I mentioned, and that mission focus has always been really important to me and my work, both in the workplace and extracurricularly, if you will. And I've really enjoyed having the opportunity to continue to do that work from the outside in, as a consultant.
Yeah, It's cool because while you say you came to consulting earlier than you expected, it sounds like your time there at JCRC was actually more consultative, even though you weren't a consultant.
Yeah, I think very true. I think throughout my career in different ways, there's been a consultative element to my work. Even at Biogen, for example, I was an internal org effectiveness partner to the R&D organization and to corporate functions. And that was very much a, providing insight and reflection and experience to help to elevate the performance of those teams and organizations in a consultative manner. So it has definitely been a thread.
Yeah. And you know, for listeners out there who aren't all that familiar with organizational effectiveness, organizational development, what's the layperson's kind of description of what that means, you know, different from what traditional HR functions kind of do day to day?
Yeah, so the way I would describe the work is really helping organizations and teams think about the structures, processes, and people that are going to enable the work forward to drive the business performance or the desired outcomes of that moment in time or of the organization as a whole. So I really see it as helping to connect the dots between how do we want to organize ourselves so that we can operate efficiently and effectively, ensuring that we have the right people and capabilities in place to do that, and doing it proactively too, right? There's many times that it's reactive, right? You're doing a reorg because something has happened financially to the organization, and you're ideally, though, you've done some of the work ahead of that moment in time to have an understanding of what's most critical for us going forward. And yes, we might be able to have more than that for the time being, but what is most critical for us and knowing that it's dynamic. And I think that's why it's an ongoing element, right? It's the macro environment is ever changing. The internal environment is ever changing. That pace, as we all have felt, continues to somehow become faster and happen more in a more interconnected way also. So I would also say that the org effectiveness work is about helping to orient to the larger picture by connecting the dots holistically, internally and externally, to really drive the areas of focus that are going to matter most.
So as I reflect on the words you used, insight, reflection, experience, and we talked about the consultative elements of this, when you've worked with teams in this capacity, do you find that you're often reacting to a problem, like you might have mentioned there, even in the JCRC days, or are you shifting more towards an opportunity, more attached to strategy? Like, when do people pick up the phone and say, gee, we really need the OD team to come in and help us through this moment?
Yeah, I think my experience is it's been a mix. I have the most fun when it's proactive, right? When there's the opportunity to think ahead, even 6 months ahead. It doesn't have to be like you're looking through trying to look through a crystal ball. But there's the acknowledgement that there's something around the corner.
Yeah.
And my job or other people's job is to help see around that corner, to surface, to create space to surface what different people in the room's perspectives might be of what is around the corner, right? And helping to set the organization or team or community up for success with that anticipation in mind. So I think that there's, when there's a known strategic pivot or, you know, having done a lot of work in biotech, when you know that, you know, you've hit a milestone where commercialization is now in your timeline within reach, right? There's still a lot of time to fill to get that right. But to wait until the 11th hour is typically foolish, right? There's things that you can be doing proactively to set yourself up, even culturally too. I think the other element of org effectiveness work is helping leaders and teams set up the container, right, for the work, the culture, the framework of leadership, the expectations of how you want people to show up as they deliver their expertise and towards their goals. That how yes. matters a lot, as many of us have experienced. And defining that as a choice, right? That's a leadership choice. That's an organizational choice. And the fun work that I see in org effectiveness is taking a step back with the team to do that with intention, right? And yeah. not just make it, like, it can just happen, but more likely it's going to serve you better if it's done with intention and continuously reviewed. Not, you don't need to do a deep dive assessment per se, but a pause to say, does this still work for us as we make this strategic pivot? Are there elements yeah. of how we do things that we need to let go of, that we need to double down on, that we need to pivot slightly, that we need to introduce that is net new because we're operating in a totally different environment, whatever that might be, and being open to, like, helping teams be open to that as possibility and excitement as opposed to burden.
Yeah, no, I like that. And it actually, it raises a question around the unit of measure. Is it like, are you coming in to do that proactive work with a team or a function or whole org? Do you find that there's a better jumping off point, you know, particularly when things are changing quickly? I'd just be intrigued by your view there.
Yeah. And I think my view continues to evolve. And I think, you know, as you know, Dane, one of my professional mantras is context matters a lot. As does language, right? And I think that from a context perspective, there are points in time where doing this type of, having these types of conversations and planning at the team level makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
There's other times where that's too limiting because that team is not operating in a vacuum and has to be playing nice with teams to the left and to the right and in order to get their work done. So to make any significant change requires at least some subset of teams within the broader organization. Yep. And there's other times where the pivots cross, you know, the need for change is a call to action across multiple groups. But having appreciation for and line of sight to the interdependencies of those and, like, breaking down the silos even to have those conversations, I think matters a lot. So yeah. Even within relatively small organizations, we find ourselves often pulling ourselves into silos, right? To
yes.
focus, to get work done, because that's kind of where the primary component of our work is going. And more often than not, at least a subset of that team is working with other teams or dependent yes. on inputs from other teams to get stuff done. So to narrow the focus too much is typically short-sighted. But you do it too large and you can barely turn the ship.
Yeah. So you're kind of looking for a bit of a Goldilocks condition of sorts.
Yeah. Well, it's less about Goldilocks and more about, it's multi-directional, right? So, like, individual teams can have influence in the bigger organization. The executive team within a larger organization is setting a tone of expectation yeah. from the top to, again, to create a container of sorts for what it's going to be. And then the work happens in the middle, right? And that's where, you know, so much of organizational health and lies in the hands of mid-level, mid to senior level team leaders or team of team leaders
yeah.
to engage people in an effective way to drive the work.
No, I like that. I think that the we've had a few guests on the show that will often talk to the team of teams or the team ecosystem in an organization. Because you're right, at an individual level, you get a wonderful leader, comes new into an organization, has a really cool view on how they want to set their team or department up. And no matter what their intentions are, they don't contain all of the work that their team does. There's all of those other interfaces. So you can kind of pilot certain behaviors and maybe influence others from where you're finding your own success and energy, but it's hard to really land a, cohesive and sustainable outcome, just as one leader and of one team amongst many.
Yeah, and that peer alignment at that mid-level, right, cross-functionally is huge, right? Because you are helping and shepherding, leading by example, right, across the organization in a much more cross-functional, hands-on way than the most senior of leaders, right? And, you know, in a conversation I was having today, there's also the notion that, you know, you can have very strong individual leaders, but their teams being fully engaged and activated as part of that leader's accountability and journey matters a lot, right? So we can't be over-dependent on building healthy team leaders. It has to be the teams overall, right? As a new leader comes into an organization, you know, organizations will do new leader assimilations. The way that we typically think about that, though, is yes, a new leader is coming in, but it's really a new team forming, right, through that.
Yes.
Maybe it's just the new leader that's new, but that's creating a disruption in the team that is a moment to step back and say, okay, what do we need to know about this leader? But also, what does the leader need to know about us? What
yes.
are things that are going well that we can't lose sight of? What does this new leader create opportunity for us to think about differently? And how can we come together as a team, not just in service of the leader being successful, but in service of all of us being successful?
Yes. Yeah, we had Leanne Davey on the show, and she was just talking about how dynamic teams are and exactly what you just said. You bring one new person onto the team. It doesn't even have to be a leader. It just could be a key team member.
Yeah.
And the whole dynamic of the team can change. So this concept of the new leader assimilation, most, you know, small teams, businesses kind of think that onboarding and orientation is really like, here's the company, here are our main tools, here are our goals, get started. But your view on new leader assimilation, I'd like to hear a bit more about that. Like, how can you, as a leader of an organization or as a team member that's bringing new talent in, how can you kind of create the conditions to, you know, have those conversations, create more affirmation and awareness?
Yeah. I think that there's more time and space than we sometimes give ourselves permission to create, mm-hmm. to build relationship and connection. So ensuring that leaders onboarding or the new team members onboarding is inclusive of one-on-ones and like beyond the first 30 days, right? That becomes a cadence, at least for a period of time across the team, so that,
yeah.
Because in those one-on-ones, you're getting to know each other, but you're also creating some safety in asking questions and being curious, right? About the work, about the organization, about the individual, all of it is important, right? As you create even 20, 30 minute conversations and keeping that as some type of rhythm that works for you, right? That rhythm is going to look different as you figure out what the level of required connection, if you will, from a professional day-to-day work standpoint might be. But at first, connecting with your team members on a somewhat regular cadence helps to build that. And we find that in our work that professional intimacy that you can create in your relationships by just getting to know each other as human beings and also appreciating that new perspective that is being invited into the team with this new person joining is a gift. Like, there's a lot that can be gleaned from that individual's experience, and they're going to learn from you too, as far as what you've been doing and what's been working. But that requires some safety, right? There's ego, like we're human, right? So it's not to challenge what you know to be your experience, but it is potentially to introduce different possibility, right, through that. So I think that's huge. I think that's extremely important. I think the other thing is not assuming that just through like your initial onboarding conversation and orientation that it all kind of sinks in and is applied, right? Like, there's things that we're going to be oriented to that aren't going to really come to life for another quarter, right? Whether that's planning for a board presentation or mm-hmm. an understanding the board dynamic. Well, if you're told that your first week, and then that's not being activated really for another quarter, there's probably an opportunity to revisit some of what was covered in those initial conversations, right? So just being mindful that, and that's kind of onboarding in general, but I think especially for leaders, you're drinking from a fire hose when you're joining an organization, right? Both the people you're getting to know and the business you might be learning and the dynamics that might be at play, all of those things. And each one of those alone is significant. So ensuring that there's an opportunity to revisit and that there's genuine opportunity for them to ask questions and not just assume because they've done it somewhere else, they can do it here. That whole going back to context matters, right? Like it likely looks different, right, in that
very
organization.
Different. I wonder, so if there's a listener out there right now, and let's say they're a CEO or president of a business, they're bringing a new leader in, they've never done a new leader assimilation, and you sit down with them and you give them a blank piece of paper and you kind of say, hey, these are the conversations, pieces of information that we should do with this new leader. Like how would you, let's say you've only got a few minutes with them, how would you coach them into structuring that on the run?
Yeah, it's a good question, Dane. I would say create the opening through how they're talking to people for feedback and observation to be shared, but in both directions, right? So set that as an expectation. Like, as I come in, I'm going to have observations of what I see and learn and curiosities. You're going to have the same of me, and that's okay, right?
Yeah.
And then it's, you know, once you've been in seat for, call it 30, 60, 90 days, whatever your time horizon might look like, we're going to ask the team to step back and reflect, you know, what do they still curious about? Of you as a leader and as an individual, what things are going well, not just about you as the leader, but for us as a team.
Yeah.
What's getting in our way? If we were to introduce one new way of doing things, what would it be and why would that matter? Right. And create an opportunity for some conversation about that. And then invite you back into the room to play back answers to questions they might have or to engage in the conversation with them about solutioning, right? So relatively quickly moving to action. And it doesn't have to be, it's often not big things, right? It's in the category of little big things in my mind, right? The small actions that we can take individually and collectively that move the needle over, sometimes in the moment and other times over time. So defining those early in your tenure, and then circling back to that, right? So, you know, the other practice that I would suggest is having a standing agenda item at your quarterly discussions or whatever the cadence is for you, not monthly, that's probably overkill, but like on a regular basis, checking in. We committed to these things. Yeah. How are we doing? How could we be doing that better? Are there new things that have come up? Are there other rubs that are in our way, both either internally amongst ourselves or with some key stakeholders in the organization, and what can we do about it?
Well, I like that.
But having that be a topic of conversation by design. And if the answer is there's nothing, great, move on to the next thing, but at least have the space.
I like that layout, those kind of three key pieces, because it's not, you know, something that you need to spend hours, you know, pulling PowerPoints together and library of materials. It's very conversational. And it's
a flip chart and some post-it notes. You're good.
Yeah. That's powerful. That's powerful. Because I think a lot of leaders fall into the trap of saying, well, it's better that we just go sink or swim. We've got some materials. You just go in there and talk to people. But just taking that extra half an hour of intentionality to map out the first conversation, the first team meeting, that 30, 60, 90 day kind of reflection, readout, blind spot checkup, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah,
it can be very powerful.
Yeah, the other element of power that I think it has is it becomes a shared responsibility, right? It's not just about the leader or any one individual member of the team. Like that's the beauty of teaming. It also can get in the way. Like we're humans, it can get in the way. Yeah. But at its core, it's the bringing together of, right, that elevates the fun of the work, but also the output of the group when we're bringing together all of those things and all of the superpowers, as we've talked about here, like that exist on that team. So by relatively quickly moving from focus on a new person or a new leader coming in to broadening that out to say, okay, and we're on a team, right? And that dynamic is going to shift just by a new team member coming in because there's different style, there's different level of relationship and trust, right? It can rebuild again quickly, but you have a moment of a reset, right? Yeah. And that's not a switch as much as we want it to be.
No. Switches are so easy. It's like make this thing contact these two things. But I think from what I'm hearing here, Jenna, it's like we need to create a framework. I love the way you talked about creating that recognition that we're going to be open to feedback and we're going to get into this rhythm. I think rhythm's another key word that you use there. So it's not just on or off. It's like, let's take the time to be in this, working it, molding it, and looking at it from different perspectives.
Yes. And knowing what's yours too, like with that rhythm element.
Yeah.
It's not, you know, it differs. It differs for different organizations, for different teams, and it might evolve over time too. It's a dynamic element where the pace of things, even over a period of time, is going to be different. And being true to that, right? And just because your cadence at one point was monthly doesn't mean that that's appropriate right now. Maybe you now need to meet weekly because you're working on a sprint
or daily.
Other times, like quarterly is sufficient, right? I think in the whole conversation around productivity and time, right? Like it's a construct, but it's real. And it comes with pressure and stress for people. So by respecting people's time, you're also respecting who they are, what they do, how they spend, what they do at work, outside of work, et cetera.
Yeah.
And allowing the rhythm that's required to match the rhythm that you implement.
Yeah.
It takes some discipline and some checkpoint, but I guess that brings me back. I hadn't really thought about this previously, but like to that notion of reflection, right, and intention.
Yep.
And it doesn't have to, you don't have to belabor it, but even just a 10-minute pause to say, wait a second, what is my meeting cadence with this person or these people? Does that still work? And are we getting to all the things that we need to get to? Are we meeting and there's nothing to talk about?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That can be really powerful.
It can be. And there's this whole notion of being in the flow. I like the way you talked about it, even, for example, with the board meeting and the board pack. Like, let's not just unload everything on someone all at once. Let's not just onboard them and say, here's all the tools, here's all the systems, here's how our board meetings work, good luck. It's like bringing the right conversations at the right time so people can, like, get into it as a team, realize this is what it takes to be ready for that board meeting next month. Do a bit of work together on it, play it back in a safe environment.
Yes.
And then go execute. It's it doesn't actually take a lot more time, but I think going back to being intentional, you need to make, and you said at the very beginning, you need to make the time, make the space.
Yeah. And by doing so, you'll probably find time.
Yeah. 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 Very cool. Superpowers is an interesting one. You touched on it there. We were at rugby training this week, and one of our coaches said to all of the players, he said, we're all playing the same game, but we're in different parts of the team, and each of you have your own superpowers. So your goal for tonight is to really work out what is your superpower, and I want you to focus on that tonight. And I thought that was so fun and playful because we're all doing very similar drills, but this person's tackling, this person's kicking, this person's communicating, and they're creating more like muscle memory and awareness of what it is that makes them stand out. So, you know, when you're doing, whether it's a new leader assimilation or you're going in to do some org effectiveness work, how much does the individual's competency, capability come into light outside of their role and responsibility? Like, are superpowers something that you're seeing tracked more or acknowledged more in teams?
I would like it to be. I mean, I think one approach that we take to that is through creating space for some storytelling. And whether that's an extensive kind of lifeline exercise or asking people to reflect on a pivotal moment in their career or in their life that kind of helped to define kind of who they are and how they got to where they are now.
Yeah.
That surfaces, sometimes we use a superpower language or something like that, but even without that, I think it provides line of sight to what makes someone excitable, right? Like what drives them. We'll often sometimes incorporate like through a leadership team's journey of kind of coming together and aligning and being more effective in that capacity, you know, surfacing up what are your pet peeves? Like what does, if anyone does it, like it doesn't matter if it's your partner or your colleague or your direct report or a neighbor, but like what gets under your skin? And just it's amazing to me, like the exhale along with the laughter that comes with that, right? It's like we remind ourselves we are all people. We have our things.
Yes.
Sometimes they have room to show up. A lot of times we feel like they don't. But when there's room for them to show up and just be named, it is a relief, right? And it's without judgment. And people are going to come to that question and answer it to the level that they are comfortable, right? For the lifeline, some people stay purely in the professional zone. And there's still insight. There's still a gift that they're sharing.
Yeah.
With themselves by making it known and with someone, with their colleagues by, you know, again, making it known. But then there are others who it's like their entire personal journey is captured on a page or in an image or in their 5-minute voiceover. And the level of relatedness and connection and sympathy and empathy that arises from that is significant, right? Along with that lens that you had asked about of superpower, it's like, oh, and like I learned this way back when, but it's become something that I ensure shows up in all that I do, right? Like, and it's something that I anchor to in when I'm doing my best work, this is showing up. And it's always, it's fun to see those unlocks. And again, I think there are many times where it's, maybe not the first time they're doing that type of exercise, but with that team, it potentially is. And it's really, really powerful when we can just relate as human beings.
Yeah. And I like the way you lead into story to highlight not only the superpowers, but those kryptonites, you know, the things, whether it's a pet peeve or something that someone just really, you know, starts to get foggy and tired when they're forced to go and look at an Excel spreadsheet or whatever it might be.
Yeah, well, and then you round it out. It's like, oh, you don't like to do that, but I do. Like, and then you
can help, you realize trade.
Then you're, I mean, talking about like what gives you energy and what sucks it, right? Like if there's something on your plate that is totally sucking your energy and there's someone to the left or the right or around you that can take that off and do it with a sense of commitment and knowledge and speed that like is getting in your way, that's brilliant.
It is brilliant. And I know that there's this general sense out there right now that we could be trading, rather than judgment with each other, we could be trading energy. And if we could all just be a little bit more intentional about trading energy, then to your point, there may be a team member who would love to do the piece of work that you're stuck on, or at least be part of that conversation to help you move through it. But but all too often, we just get stuck doing our job and lock ourselves down when we're falling behind. We don't feel safe to go out and share and say, guys, I've got this on and it's absolutely killing me this week.
Yeah, absolutely.
The lifeline exercise, again, let's say we've got a leader out there who's listening today, he thinks, gee, I'd like to do some of this identification of superpowers, kryptonite, energy in my team. What does that look like?
Yeah, so it's an exercise where we encourage people to think about their life's journey to date And to capture it in a way that resonates with them. So I've been in teams where either on the team or facilitating where people capture it graphically. Mm-hmm. Other people capture it a bulleted list. Others, you know, they draw a very creative image or picture, or, you know, icons or things like that. So even just in how someone tells their story can be very telling of who they are and how their brain thinks and how they express emotion or not, with what level of comfort they come to that. So that alone, I think, can be a really interesting takeaway. But what we encourage people to think about is, as you think about your journey in your life to date, personally and or professionally, how would you capture highs and lows, peaks and valleys? How would you, what are moments where you maybe took a left turn instead of a right and it had an impact? What choices were made for you versus that you chose, and how did that play out? Where did you have kind of inflection points or dips, however you define that in your journey? Who are people that entered or exited your journey that had an impact on you and your experience? And we leave it somewhat open. Like, those are guiding questions.
Cool.
And then we ask folks to depict that. Sometimes it's pre-work. Sometimes it's done in the room real time. And then give people typically 8 to 10 minutes each to share that out. And it provides that opportunity to tell and own your story, or the version of your story that you're comfortable sharing in that setting. Creates an opportunity for curiosity and questions too. So we open it up for the team members to seek to understand different elements that they hear. And it really is a share. So sometimes we'll do it all at the front end of the session. Other times we'll kind of pace it throughout a day or a day and a half so that it's not one and done kind of as part of the agenda, but throughout kind of give people the opportunity to storytell. And it's interesting. There's been multiple teams that I've worked with where there are people that have worked together either on that team or in a different team earlier or for a longer period of time. And many times they learn things for the first time. So people who have known each other That's for cool. 10, 15, 20 years are like, oh my gosh, I never knew that about you. And like, that's really interesting because, right, like, they see something that is clearly a result of or was impacted by that the experience that the person shares.
It really increases awareness and appreciation for each other just at a basic level of human connection.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. It goes back to that professional intimacy element, right? Like, I think it's something we talk about often, and sometimes it gives people like a little bit of a reaction. But I think we have found in the work that we've done with teams, and I've kind of observed this throughout my career, that when you open it yourself up just a little bit beyond your comfort zone into what we'll often refer to as your stretch zone, right? You create tremendous possibility in the relationships with the people that you're working with that then just drives the ability to do better, more fun work together, right?
Yeah.
It doesn't mean that you're divulging all your deepest, darkest secrets or that you're going to be best friends with everyone that you work with. That's not the intent.
No.
It's more about acknowledging that the context that we're in is not the context we've always been in, and the context that we've been in previously have helped to inform how we are showing up in the now. And that can be a helpful way to be related with, communicated with, partnered with, et cetera.
I think that's a cool exercise. We should work with Alicia to kind of put out a little kind of one pager exercise for any listeners who kind of want to go and do this for their
own
team. They can obviously reach out to you and get help if needed. But that's a great segue into what we were discussing pre-show. Which was one of your biggest hopes for the future of teamwork, which was really around community. So these little exercises like the lifeline or the new leader assimilation and all of the other ways that you can be more intentional about creating time and space to talk about how you work together, ultimately they build connection at a human level. And community, I like the way you framed it before the show. You were like, there's this intersection between how you build community at work and through your work, and then how teamwork plays out back in the community. So there's some really interesting kind of bi-directional energy going there. I'd love to get more of a sense of, you know, when you see a healthy team, a team that is being very intentionally engaged in the way they do their work, their mission, what they're fighting for, what their purpose is, how does that spill over into, you know, internal community and wider community?
So I think that spillover is not always appreciated in the moment, but is very powerful. None of the work that we do in any facet of our lives happens in a vacuum. So whether that's within your family dynamic, within your neighborhood and your town, within your organization, industry, right? Like the circles overlap, and we're part of something bigger, always. And I think that the implications of what happens within one has a trickle effect to what happens on others. Yeah. Again, I think there's many times it's intangible or below the surface, but that doesn't mean it isn't having an impact or anything like that. I think about some of the community work that I'm currently involved in my town is related to financial challenges for the town that has direct impact on all services, inclusive of schools. And this is not unique to my town in Massachusetts. It is a statewide challenge.
Yeah.
So when we look left and right and we see override here, success, override here, fail, that we're immediately looking to the success stories to understand what we can be doing to ensure we're successful. We're looking to where there was failure and having a significant amount of empathy for the impact that that's having on town members and leaders and systems that need to now do more with less over and over and over again. And so it quickly builds on itself and creates in some ways, it creates a good energy, right? Like it creates a focus, it creates a lessons learned. It creates a level of relatedness too, like, oh, we're not in it alone. And like, we need to solve our local problem before we can even think about potentially solving our broader state problem. But really, should we be doing it the other direction? Like it's a lot of bubbling up that I think will lead to some state action if it hasn't already. But I think the same thing happens within organizations, right? When we talk about healthy teams, those teams are communities, right? They're communities that are of people that are coming together in service of something, of work, of output, to a bigger picture. And they are community within community. And there's ERGs that are communities within an organization, right? Of people who are coming together around a common identity or common interest or common passion. And they feed off of each other, right? But it's the system, right? It's the ecosystem within which we find ourselves that the common denominator professionally, I've talked about it being teams, but in the kind of broader world, it's the community element. And there's, you know, having a healthy community, it requires diversity of thought and perspective and engagement. You know, even everyone that I'm working with on this initiative in our town, we're coming at it from very different perspectives. There's people who have lived in this town for decades and others like myself who are newer to town. There's people who have children in schools, and there's people who the most critical thing is that there's ambulances available, you know, because they're elderly or they have someone in their home who depends on that service more regularly than they would like, but more regularly, right? And all of those are common. There's a common denominator of healthy community, but we come at it from our different perspectives. And what I've gleaned from the work with teams that we've been doing that I've done throughout my career and the community work that I've done throughout my life, that even with those different perspectives, it's like that the center point of the Venn diagram is often larger than we allow ourselves to think, because we go to difference. Like we go to differ ourselves, right? Like we go to other people and circumstance when in reality, there is a common denominator of basic needs, of expectations of name the thing, right?
Yeah.
Desire to want to be part of something in some way, shape, or form.
Yes.
And the different energies that we might each bring to that are okay, right? There's some people who are giving hours upon hours upon hours of their time, right? There's others within the workplace where their discretionary effort is extremely high. And there's others at different moments where you're just like, you're doing just the bare minimum because that's all you have to give because of all this other stuff going on in your life, right? Yeah. And it's an ebb and flow. It's dynamic, just like everything else, but it's all in service of. And if we can all focus in more in all of the communities that we're a part of that common center, I think that a lot of magic can happen.
I really like that. I particularly like that commentary there, Jenna, on, you know, the center of the Venn diagram being bigger than we give it credit. And actually, I saw a great post from Heather McGowan recently that said, if we could all just approach each other as a friend first rather than the other, we would just solve so many more problems.
Yes.
But yeah, that shift towards other, particularly in the times that we're living in with, you know, loneliness epidemic, social media, information overload. There's a lot going on right now. So we've got to find more ways to seek out that friendship and to hold a bit of uncertainty and curiosity and see what we can create together.
Yeah. And when we can befriend people who are coming from different perspectives and life experiences and needs and wants at this moment in time, our understanding of the bigger picture and of what's really important evolves, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm drawn back as we have this element of the conversation about otherness to those, my early part of my career with the work I was doing with NGO leaders cross-culturally. And so much of the conversation was about how easy it is to other and ignore or other and be better than.
Yes.
Or dismiss, right? And create distance from, right? Yeah. And then I think about the loneliness epidemic that we're all living through right now. And as much as we, as humans, regardless of how introverted or extroverted we are social beings.
Yes.
And we need connection. That it looks different for different people, but you need connection. And yet we find it hard because of all the things, social media, coming out of the pandemic, et cetera, to create time and space for that.
Yeah. Yep.
We have to. And as places of work, we have to create permission for that. And as individuals and parents and colleagues and friends, we need to encourage it to find multiple places of connection, belonging, and purpose, right? Because it's not only going to be in one place, most likely, and you're not going to get everything. Putting all of your eggs in one basket, like your employer, right, for example, is not going to serve you well, right? And it's not reasonable to put it all on your partner. Also, isn't reasonable, right? You need to build that community. It can be three people or things. It doesn't have to be extensive. But and I'm saying this to myself just as much as I'm saying it to anyone else. I need the reminder daily, like, you know, reach out to, spend time with, right? Connect with a cause, right? Be part of something where you're appreciating, again, and creating space for another perspective to just heighten your awareness and or your sense of connection.
Yeah, I love that. I think that's such a great call to action and hope for what the future of teamwork looks like. It's a great point to end on. It's been a wonderful conversation, Jen, and I love the way that, you know, we talked about, you know, everything from, you know, the role of teams in organizations, particularly those mid-level leaders who are doing a lot of the connectivity in organizations. I love the new leader assimilation, the way you shared that, bringing that new leader in, helping be more intentional about team launches, creating this time and space to build relationships and connections, whether that's you know, internally or sending people out to be volunteering in whatever it is that's important to them. And there's this general theme of rhythm that you touched on there too, mm-hmm. and creating the safety to be having the feedback, to be being curious, to be exploring difference and building trust within that. I thought that was super cool. Storytelling, I always love when we touch on storytelling, but I love the way that you use the lifeline to kind of capture superpowers and kryptonite and just awareness of each other. Mm. Coming into that final piece of the conversation, not relying on one thing, like not putting all your eggs in one basket, having, you know, multiple communities, multiple teams to tuck into for, you know, whether it's curiosity or embracing discomfort and your growth edges, or,
yeah,
you know, playing different roles, understanding other people's perspectives. I think in the micro and the macro, it can help you build better products in your workplace. It can also help you build healthier communities for, you know, kids and friends to be growing up in. So cool conversation. Thank you for the time today.
Thank you, Dan. It was a pleasure.
Yeah. And if any of our listeners want to reach out and find you, extend this conversation, learn more about the new leader assimilations or lifelines or other exercises that you like to run with teams, where do they best connect?
I would say LinkedIn is probably the best place to find me.
Awesome. We'll make sure we connect you in all of the show notes. And we'll talk on Monday.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you for joining us. Remember that by embracing vulnerability, trusting our intuition, and approaching challenges with compassion, we not only strengthen our teams, but also pave the way for a future where collaboration thrives. If you're hungry for more insights, strategies, and research on collaboration, head over to thefutureofteamwork.com. There, you can join our mailing list to stay updated with the latest episodes and get access to exclusive content tailored to make your team thrive. Together, we can build the future of teamwork. Until next time,